Well, the events of our reading in Mark today take place in the region of the Decapolis. And sometimes areas are significant, aren't they? And if we're to understand this passage, understanding about this area, it's significant. This is one of those occasions where we need to just delve into a bit of the history of a place. And actually, if you remember, one of the wonderful things about Mark is that he never gives us a piece of detail if there isn't some significance attached to it. So if he gives us some detail more than once, then it's really important to what he's trying to say, what he's trying to communicate. Mark's gospel is so concise that there is not a word in it, barely, that doesn't have some kind of meaning or can add some kind of a knowledge to what he's trying to explain. So what do we know about the Decapolis region? And why is it important to note that this is where Jesus had travelled to on the occasion of this reading? Well, firstly, the Decapolis, deca in Greek means 10, and polis means city. And it's only mentioned 3 times in the New Testament. So unsurprisingly, you will know now from what we've just said, this region consists of 10 cities. And they are Greco-Roman cities. And historically, the region had had a lasting impact on Israel. Well, it would, wouldn't it? Having a different culture, a different set of beliefs right on your doorstep. You see, after Alexander the Great's death in 323 BC, his 4 generals carved his empire into the kingdoms, and 2 of which shared a border with Judea. Now, the ambition of this project was to Hellenize the culture. In other words, to make the culture all around them Greek. They wanted to erode the culture that they had gone into. They wanted to do it in such a way that it fits with their own. We can see that going on in society today, can't we? Before, Christianity and Christian morals and a Christian culture was what we wanted people to have in this country. Perhaps to a point where people were persecuted if they didn't hold those things. That's not a perfect scenario. And then we became more tolerant, still holding to these Christian values. And now today, secularism creeps in, and Christians are beginning to be persecuted for the views they have. It's what empires do. If we don't think we live in an empire anymore, well, it's a more subtle expression of one, but it's what we live in. And it's easier for leaders and politicians to get people to do what they want if they share a group of beliefs. And so this initially was what Alexander the Great saw as being the case, not just in this particular area, but for any other area where he settled in. And in his cities, in these 10 cities, there were a lot of Greek settler soldiers who lived there, and their families continued to live there long, long into the future. They had their own court system there. They had their own currency, their own temples, their own theatres, their own armies. They were repulsed by the cultures that they saw within that region. But equally so, the people in that region, including the Jews, were repulsed by the Greeks. They were repulsed by their pagan worship. They were repulsed by their unbiblical sexual practices, and they resisted the cultural intrusion that these people brought into Israel. So from this, perhaps you get some understanding of why the Jews saw these people as being dogs. Their behavior was abhorrent. The Jews of Jesus' day did not like it. And Jesus, when he speaks to that Gentile woman, can you remember, he is reflecting what the Jews, he is mirroring what the Jews say about them. We looked at that last week. And if you've got different cultures at work, different belief sets at work, there will be clashes, won't there? Unsurprisingly, there are notable clashes between the people of the Decapolis and the Jews at this time. And things really came to a head in 167 BC when Antiochus sacrificed a pig on the altar of the temple to Zeus. That happened in Jerusalem in the temple. An animal that is unclean being sacrificed to a god that is not the one true God. Can you imagine the problems that would have caused? And this act set off a revolt, the Maccabean revolt. And the Jews, they had victory in this, and it's still celebrated to this day. It's Hanukkah. They remember it. It was a great victory where their culture stood firm and it won out. But some Jews did become Hellenized. They did become Greek. And we just have to look to Scripture to see evidence of this. Timothy, in the book of Acts, he comes from a marriage that is between a Greek and a Jew. He is uncircumcised. And these kind of animosities and Hellenization, it all continued and it affected the culture of those areas and the relations between those areas for the next 100 years after that revolt. In 63 BC, Pompey took Judea for Rome, and with it the Greeks in the Decapolis cities. The Greeks inspired much of the Roman customs. So you can see that between the Romans and the Greeks, there was a bit more in common. And actually, there was great relief for the Greeks at this point. They resented the Jewish way of doing things. They resented the fact that Israel had been in charge of things. And now these 10 Gentile cities with the Greek descendants, they enjoyed protection from Rome. And in return, they would help Rome protect the trade routes. So you can see it was, I scratch you back, your back, you scratch mine. The Romans and the Greeks got on. They could understand each other much better. And if the truth be told, Rome did little to ease the tensions between the Greeks and the Jews. And eventually, it all erupted in Caesarea with the Great Revolt in 66 AD. So you can see these cities, this area, the Decapolis, is a little outlying area that is completely different to Judea, to Israel. And there are several significant New Testament events that happened in the Decapolis region. And two of these, and you could argue, and I will argue, that three of these, really, all three of them happen in Mark's Gospel. Explicitly two, implicitly one. So the first one is, and we might have come to this already because it's one that we've already read about in Mark, is in Mark chapter 5, verses 9 to 20. And we didn't dwell much on the area because it was the first time that Mark was mentioning the area at this time. When Mark mentions something a second time, that is when you realize that there's real meaning there. But in Mark chapter 5, 9 to 20, you can check it if you like, Jesus, you remember, cast out demons into pigs. That was in the Decapolis region. And it was his first trip to a Gentile area. The second incident happens in this reading today that we've got in Mark 7, 31 to 37. And Jesus, he heals a deaf mute. And the third thing that happens, and we can find it explicitly in Matthew's gospel in chapter 4, is when Jesus, it documents Jesus having been followed in this region by huge crowds. Well, actually, this follows on from our reading today. Next week, we're going to look at the feeding of the 4,000. It's the same thing as Matthew documents. So you see, we've been to the Decapolis before in our study with Mark. And Mark wants us to remember this. He wants you to know that Jesus is in this region again, because it's important that we compare and contrast what Jesus has done there in the past with what Jesus is now doing. So you recall then, in the first incident back in chapter 5, let's go back there. You recall that leading up to that, there was the storm at the sea. And it might have seemed unplanned, perhaps, that Jesus landed where he did with his disciples. But it's all part of God's plan. They land on the edge of the Decapolis region. In fact, they don't go very far at all, because there's a very powerful public miracle that happens right on the shoreline. It's the driving out of many demons known collectively as Legion, from the infamous madman of that area who'd been terrorizing the region. And from this, there are two things to note regarding what happens here in this first incident in the Decapolis region. First, that Jesus was asked to leave the region as soon as this miracle had happened. People saw the pigs receive the demons, run down in and drown themselves. It must have been a horrible scene. And word spread quickly, and the authorities and people came and they said, "Would you just get back in your boat and go, Jesus?" A public miracle and a public rebuke, and they sent Jesus on his way. And Jesus went willingly at this stage. And also, the second thing is that the man who had been possessed by the demons, you remember, he wanted to go with Jesus. And Jesus would not let him. Instead, he told him to go throughout Decapolis and tell people what Jesus had done for him. So although Jesus wasn't going to be there doing anything else, doing any more preaching, word would have spread about this scene that had been caused. So it would be fair to say that Jesus had a reputation in Decapolis. And the evidence is that the man who had been healed by Jesus had certainly done what Jesus had asked him to do. People knew who Jesus was now in this area. I mean, why do you think the Gentile woman, the Greek woman who we read about last week, why do you think she approached Jesus for her daughter's deliverance from demon possession? Word had been spread. People knew about Jesus. Jesus has already done a miracle in this Gentile area. And now he's done a miracle for this Gentile woman and her daughter. So you see, it makes perfect sense why what happens in our passage today happens. Once again, there is a miraculous healing. This time of a man who was not able to hear or speak. But once again, in Mark's gospel, the story is not that Jesus does all things well. The story is not that Jesus performs a healing in a slightly eyebrow-raising way this time, with saliva. Perhaps he was just mixing it up a bit, I don't know. I'm not going to look into it at this point, because I don't feel that's what Mark wants us to concentrate on. Yes, it is an incredible healing. Yes, Jesus does all things well. And yes, it was a wonderful and liberating experience for the man. Of course it was. But the story here, and what Mark wants you to recognize, is that Jesus heals the man of his deafness privately and asks that this is not reported on. This is the exact opposite to what happened the last time that Jesus was in this region. Last time, a public miracle, the pigs causing a huge scene, being asked to leave, telling somebody to go and spread the news. This time, Jesus quietly does the job that he needs to do, tells them not to go and spread the word. You see, if people knew that the same Jesus who had driven out the legion of demons into the pigs had returned, if they'd become aware of his presence, he would have been encircled by all those crowds of people immediately, wouldn't he? He would have been persecuted, just as he'd been persecuted in his hometown. He would have been driven out of the region once more before being able to do anything. But this time, Jesus has no intention of leaving early. This is no fleeting visit. This is a purposeful and planned visit to a region that was undesirable to Jews for the historical, religious, political, and cultural reasons that I've already outlined to you. Now, if you remember back to last week, I said to you that we need to note Jesus' trajectory. It was away from the people, wasn't it? It was away from the persecution, away from the questioning, away from the religious people who could not accept the message that Jesus was saying. It was away from the busy hot spots in Judea where he's been under so much scrutiny and pressure from the authorities. And whilst he's moving away from these places, he was seeking his Father in heaven. He was praying. And his trajectory towards his Father, away from people, is increasing when he encounters the Gentile woman who was seeking her daughter's deliverance from a demon. And remember, this is an interaction which reveals to us that Jesus is here for the lost sheep amongst the Gentiles as well as amongst the Jews. Jesus has spoken the good news to the Jews. Some have accepted, many have refused, and he's gone on his way. And now where has Jesus headed? He's headed right into the Decapolis region where the Gentiles are. I cannot tell you whether Jesus was heading to Decapolis for the purpose of having a public ministry there at this point. As much as anything, I suspect that he was still on that trajectory away from the crowds, trying to recover in his humanity from the severe pressure and adversity he'd been under, wanting to spend time with the Father. But certainly, as Jesus looks up to the heavens, performing the miracle that we've heard about this week, we hear a moan, a groan, or a sigh. Says Jesus sighs deeply. The image of Jesus in his humanity that I have here as he performs this miracle is one that is weary. Perform this miracle. Yes, there was empathy. Yes, there was compassion. But he strikes me as someone still seeking refuge in the Father at this moment where he performs this miracle. But as he enters into the Decapolis region, although he's hurting because of the rejection of the Jews, he does so embarking on a new and inclusive ministry. This is something different to the divisions and the hatred that there's been between the Greeks and the Jews before. It's summed up in what Jesus' ministry is. It's an inclusive ministry, a ministry that is for everyone. It's a ministry that we sing about before we come to communion. Jesus calls us to each other. Found in him are no divides. Race and Class and sex and language, such are barriers he derides. Join the hand of friend and stranger. Join the hand of age and youth. Join the faithful and the doubter in their common search for truth. No more are Jewish believers in Jesus to say, no dogs allowed. There are no people groups unworthy of receiving the salvation through Jesus. Jesus is stepping away from the Jews who don't believe in him, and he is stepping into where the Gentiles are for those there who will believe in him, who will believe the 300 plus prophecies that state who the Messiah is. Jesus has come for all. Jesus was rejected by some in the Decapolis region in chapter 5, and they sent him on his merry way. So he left, and he left to offer the bread of life to the Jews, to any Jew who had received him, only to be rejected by many Jews, even in his hometown. Those in this region who hear his voice, those who are Jewish, did not receive him, although some did. So what does Jesus do? He returns to Decapolis in chapter 7, where he knows there are many who are hungry for the bread he offers. The Gentiles, he recognizes, are no different to the Jews. Many will reject him. Many will follow him. And indeed, in Matthew's gospel, we hear explicitly of the many followers he had in the Decapolis. And where do you think the 4,000 followers at the next great miracle come from? But suffice to say, it is clear from what we hear and what we've seen about Jesus' trajectory is that Jesus is the Lord of all. He is the Lord for all. Whatever background you come from, whatever language you speak, whatever the colour of your skin, whatever upbringing you have had, Jesus is for you. The gospel needs to be preached across and in all nations, that Jesus may be known by those who call on him as their Lord. Amen.